I went out to Silicon Valley to work in tech, and I was shocked to be the only woman in the room for a decade. I just couldn't believe how we live in a world where there's more women graduating from college than men, but yet you get to these high-paying, high-profile jobs and everyone looks the same.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. Many entrepreneurs are guided by a mission, but where does that mission come from? How do you find the thing that fuels you and where you know you can make a difference? For Randi Zuckerberg, it came from an experience she had at one of the largest tech companies in the world. When she looked around and realized at meetings that she was often the only woman in the room, Randi Zuckerberg was one of the first employees at Facebook. She spent the earlier part of her career in advertising, where there were always so many women around. But then she joined her brother Mark in building Facebook. She contributed on many fronts in those early days of Facebook and was responsible for creating the Facebook Live tool that today is used by billions of people. But something nagged at her. She would often look around when she went out on meetings in Silicon Valley and realize she was the only woman there. And she felt called to fix that, not just at Facebook, but everywhere. So after 10 years, she moved to New York to build her own business venture called Zuckerberg Media. Her mission was to get more women involved in technology. And today, her company does this by investing in startups, advising companies, running an institute to help entrepreneurs learn new technologies, and creating things like Sue's Tech Kitchen, a pop-up experience that teaches young girls about technology. And in her spare time, she's also become a Broadway producer, where she's won 2 Tony Awards, and she's authored best-selling books focused on technology for both adults and children. I wanted to talk to Randi about how she became so mission-oriented, and how she's methodically gone about creating change. So we met up in New York. When I talked to Randi, she was busier than ever. She has so many projects going on, and also had just recently given birth to a 3rd child. You'd think she'd be pressed for time to sit down with me, but if you know Randi, you know that she always manages to figure it out. So to understand her drive and mission, we started by talking about those early days at Facebook. She said they were amazing times in many ways, but also very eye-opening, as she came to discover just how much diversity was lacking within the tech industry.
It's definitely interesting because I started my career in advertising and marketing in New York City, and I was definitely not the only woman in the room. In fact, I think the company was majority female, and the CEO was Shelley Lazarus, a woman who had worked her way up from being an intern at the company to CEO. So the first in corporate environment I had was very female dominated. And I remember saying to my mom, you know, no way, mom, it's 1999. There's no more glass ceiling. Like we're done with that. And you're right. And then I went out to Silicon Valley to work in tech, and I was shocked to be the only woman in the room for a decade. I just couldn't believe how we live in a world where there's more women graduating from college than men, but yet you get to these high-paying, high-profile jobs and everyone looks the same.
Now, why is that? Because you're working in advertising, and like you just said, you know, there's tons of women.
Yep.
Why is it that, you know, what's the difference? Why in technology, in these emerging businesses, there aren't a lot of women?
I mean, I've really dedicated kind of the last 6 years of my career to figuring out where these gaps are because it was so bewildering to me. I mean, I had just graduated from Harvard University, where our class was majority female. And I just couldn't believe that there are still these industries where there's no women in the room. My research since leaving Silicon Valley and really focusing on this work has showed 2 huge gaps where we lose women. The first is much earlier than we think. It's around 8-9 years old. So we end up weeding out women going into STEM fields before they even get to college,
now,
to
why,
opt in as a
why
major.
Why is that? I want to get to both points,
yeah.
But why is that? At that age,
I think, I mean, no one knows for sure, but my hypotheses are that that's really the age where children become self-aware. And also they start to feel social and peer pressure. So they think about things like, oh, you know, that activity is for boys yeah. and that activity is for girls. And, you know, I even see that with my own son who just started the third grade. He'll say, oh no, like Lego is for boys. Yeah. And I'm like, no, Legos are plastic. They're pieces of plastic. They're not for anyone, but they want to assign a gender to everything.
Yeah, my daughter, it's so funny, this weekend was saying that it was about colors and yeah. pink. And daddy, pink is a girl's color. I'm sure no boys are going to want pink. And then she was like, but why?
Yeah. You're like, but pink is just a color. It's not for anyone. So third grade is really, I yeah. think, when a lot of that starts in force. And then I also think people are becoming self-aware. They're saying, oh, I'm good at this. Right. I'm not good at this. And that's the first time that you really hear girls say things like, I'm not good at math, is the first time you hear a sentence like that. So the first major gap means that we have to do a lot more intervention in schools, at home, and in the media with the kind of role models that young girls are seeing.
Yeah. And I want to really go back to technology and how it plays out in today's society. And we'll get to that.
Yes, absolutely.
Because I know you've done, like you said, a ton of work on this and have written books. And I mean, you have your own show yeah. On Sirius. But going back to your time when you were at Facebook and starting out and noticing yourself as the only woman yeah. in the room, like, how did that make you feel and how did you handle it?
It was definitely a very strange feeling, having never been the only woman in the room before in my career. And I just remember acutely being aware of my gender every single day for 10 years. And there's a joke that I like to tell about how my biggest advantage was that Randy is a guy's
exactly.
name. And I would email people in the early days at Facebook in Silicon Valley. And I think they would believe they were emailing with another guy.
Right.
And so, you know, I'd lock a meeting down. I'd show up. They'd be like, oh, well, where's Randy? And I was like, ah, sucker.
Right.
Like, that was basically my business strategy for getting meetings.
I love it though. I love it as an entrepreneur. It's like, so you should even made it a Y instead of an
totally,
I'm sure
should
half
have.
The people don't even realize.
Yeah, I know. Half the people don't even realize. And I think it's both funny and sad that
yeah, really.
15 years later, that's probably still my best advice to young women going into tech. And so I was just very acutely aware of it. I remember, you know, I spoke on a lot of panels at a lot of conferences on behalf of Facebook. And even after I left, and I was always the only woman on the stage at the events. They'd go down the line, they'd ask the guys, you know, really good, solid, meaty questions
yeah.
about business. And then they'd get to me and they'd say, so, you know, how are you balancing having children
oh,
and
yeah.
a job?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, wait a minute, I was on the front lines of one of the biggest companies of our generation. That's really how
yeah.
you want to spend our time together, asking me how I'm a mom?
Right, that's your question. Which is so crazy
yeah.
when you think about it. And, you know, I know that comes up for a lot of women because of that focus on being a mom. And I know you've talked about it and like mm-hmm. having balance. But really, when you were on the front lines, like you said, of this company that really is or has changed the world, that's the question that they come up
that's
with
right.
and ask you.
And so it was always boggling to me, but it just really made me realize how much needs to change in order for true gender parity to happen.
Right. And do you think that was the beginnings when this was happening to you, of you thinking about what you were going to do post Facebook and your career?
Absolutely. You know, I never thought that my focus would be on how do we get more women and girls into STEM and tech. It was just, I didn't even realize that was a problem. And I think I spent a lot of time speaking to students who are in college or people earlier in their careers. And I always say, like, it's okay if you don't know what you want to be when you grow up yet. It's okay if you feel like you don't have a calling, because sometimes a calling happens to you. And I didn't realize that this was my passion and my calling to figure out how to get more women and girls into STEM until I found myself in that experience. So that truly became something that I was very passionate about. I started diving into the numbers. Only 2% of all investment capital in Silicon Valley goes to women, which is pretty wild. I mean, when you think about the billions and billions of dollars that are flooding into tech companies, and
it's incredible to even think that that's what the number is.
That's right. And then, I mean, forget about it. That's, you know, when we talk about that's women, mostly that's white women.
Right.
I mean, forget about it. When you even dive into the numbers of women of color, I think there's been something like 37 women total in history, women of color who've raised over $1 million.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
When you say that, like in history.
In history. I mean, there will be 37 white men during this podcast recording that will raise over $1 million.
Yes. Yes.
And so that to me just really illustrates how much of a fight there is.
So you're there, you're in Silicon Valley, and you start seeing what's going on. And obviously that begins to drive your passion or what you are going to find. How did you deal with it during that time? I know you mentioned kind of like getting the meetings, but like, did that become your central focus, or was your head down and really building a business?
I mean, I really did put my head down to build the business. But one of the things that I started to do is I started to build a peer network group of women who worked at other tech companies or there weren't even that many of us. So we extended that out to women in other professions that were very male dominated. So women working in construction, women working in, you know, oil rigs, things like sure. that. We built this incredible peer network of women who all felt like they were the only woman in the room in their company or their industry. And that peer network, I think it was one of the best mentorship tools that I developed in my career, and something that really guided me through a lot of difficult moments and professionally, personally. But in a startup, luckily you're working so hard, you don't yeah. have that much time to, you know, to sit right. and feel sorry or even notice things. I mean, I really worked, you know, like 20 hours a day, seven days a week for almost 7 straight years.
And what were you spending the majority of your time on, you know, while you were there, and what was your focus?
I was leading a lot of our consumer marketing initiatives at Facebook, but the biggest project that it wasn't supposed to be part of my full-time job. I created it in one of these all-night hackathons that we did
yeah.
is Facebook Live, our live streaming service that is now.
It's a good idea.
Thank you. it's now used by over 2 billion people around the world.
That's
which
incredible.
Is incredible.
How does that make you, like, and I've been a business owner, and in my businesses, we've created experiences one at a time for people to go to big events, and like, okay, maybe over the course of my two businesses, I touched 25, 30,000 people.
Which is amazing.
Right. But when you say like 2 billion people across the world are using a product that you came up with and developed, like, how does that make you feel?
It's incredible. And I think the thing that's most incredible about it is that I never, ever thought of myself as an entrepreneur. I never would have looked you in the eye as a young woman and said that I was going to be an inventor or a creator.
Right.
I thought I was a marketer. I thought I was the person behind the scenes that was supporting other people's genius ideas. And it's really incredible to me that when I think about all of the pieces that were in play in Silicon Valley, the opportunity to just test out new ideas
yeah.
and take risks and fail truly enables anyone to unlock their inner entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And that's something that I wish more people had the opportunity to experience.
Yeah, because it's interesting. I know just from reading a bit about you and learning about you, you're really a creative. I mean, right? I know you love Broadway.
Yes,
and
I mean,
like,
I always thought I was going to be an actress.
Right.
Honestly, that's what I thought I was going to be when I grew up, and then until my parents were like, maybe, like, let's get a real job,
right.
you can act on the side.
Do that thing on the side, and right? Yeah, sure.
That's right. Exactly. But yeah, that's always been my passion. And honestly, I sort of think that's one of the reasons why I started Facebook Live was to like create a creative outlet, because I thought, oh, wow, you know, we could give everyone the chance to be their own media company inside Facebook. How fun is that? I want to be my own
right.
media company. It's like my secret repressed desires to act that like resulted in that.
I love that though, but that shows you like you had that passion. You come up with this idea. Little did you know, like just what has really happened with most people and now having their own brands and their own
yeah.
outlets, and whether you talk about Facebook or Instagram or whatever it might be, that was really the beginning of that whole time period and probably was the reason for it or it was, part of it.
I mean, I think there was a very special moment in time. Sometimes you just hit a moment in time where the timing is exactly right for the idea yeah. you're working on. I think I've seen businesses die because they start too early. I've seen them die because they're too late. Sometimes you just get lucky. And I think Facebook Live and a lot of the other tools we were building at Facebook happened right as you said, when there was this shift to public figures wanting to speak directly to their audience, not through an intermediary, and through people starting to shift away from thinking about, I work for a company or I work for a brand, for I am a brand.
I am the brand. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. That's really true now. So let's talk about, obviously, you see all of these things going on. You end up staying for 10 years?
Yeah, I was there for almost 10 years. I mean, I loved working at Facebook. It was incredible to be on that rocket ship ride. And I had a great time. But I think, you know, there's also a lot of burnout that happens when you're working at that
Sounds
pace.
Sounds like the hours. And
that's
the
right.
Times
the hours, the craziness. Yes.
Crazy.
So eventually I thought, okay, I want to start a family. I have other projects I want to do. And I think by the time I left, I was one of the only kind of early guard people that was left. So I felt like I was like a grandma, dog years there, you know?
You're all like, what, That's 30 right. years old or 25?
Yeah, I believe that I was 30 years old right. and I felt like I was like a washed up grandma.
That's so sad. Oh God.
But yeah, I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do next. And I kept coming back to this question of, why are there no women in Silicon Valley? And that was when I really started diving into my research. I wrote a book called Dot Complicated about how the tech industry unlocks so much opportunity and is changing our lives in so many positive ways. But then there's also kind of these dark underbelly secrets that there's no women and all of these other things that are happening. And so I really wanted to dive into that. And that was where I came upon those two gaps. I mentioned young children was a gap. But entrepreneurship was another huge gap that I found, that women, because they don't have funding, they don't have support, they don't have peer networks the way men do, a lot of women just aren't willing to take that risk and leap into entrepreneurship.
Yeah, and I think being in this podcast, part of Entrepreneur Magazine and Entrepreneur our Network, you know, you see that. And I think you see a lot of people who are scared to take that risk mm-hmm. and go for it. And it's so great what you're doing in so many ways on the children front and the kids. Yeah. But also with, and you can talk about Zuckerberg Institute,
yes.
which I thought was pretty unique because I had Jake Schwartz from General Assembly. They mm-hmm. they created this incredible business that was all about, their issue was when they came out of school, none of the things they learned in school or growing up really applied for them anymore in terms of the workforce.
Nothing. You learned how to be kind of a good thinker and a good writer, but which are both very important skills, but you don't actually leave with any actionable skills that you can monetize.
Yes, and I think they developed this business that was really workshops on coding and things that were relevant for today's work. And they ended up selling it to Adecco for, I don't know, $500 million.
Wow.
But what you're doing, and I noticed, and tell me about this with Zuckerberg Institute, it seemed to me like this was a place where you can go or people can learn skills that are going to be relevant today.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. So all of my work, I have a kind of an overarching company, Zuckerberg Media, and I would say 90% of the work we do fits into the two buckets that I told you, either children's entertainment and media or training entrepreneurs. Everything we do is dedicated towards, I guess, current and future entrepreneurs, if you will. So with Zuckerberg Institute, the other thing I noticed is that, you know, there's a real need in the United States, but there's also a huge need around the world. I mean, all the disadvantages that women have in the United States is tenfold in other countries. It's... So I wanted to create a way that through video conference and video learning, we could actually have people from around the world training and learning skills together and developing a peer mentorship. So we run multiple classes. Some of them are, you know, one afternoon only on a specific skill, like how to fundraise for your business. Some are, we have an ongoing 4 or 6 week class if you really want to have the kind of an entrepreneur boot camp and meet other peer mentors. And then we're actually doing our first leadership trip coming up to Dharamsala in India to meet with the Dalai Lama
and have
kind of mindful leadership.
Talk about a unique experience, a once in a lifetime experience.
It is. And we're actively thinking about trips to Israel, to places around the world where we can really take leaders outside of their comfort zone and give them different approaches.
That's so great. So tell us, Zuckerberg Media, so really what it seems in Zuckerberg Institute, I guess, is it a part of Zuckerberg Media?
Yes.
So they all fall under.
Exactly. So Zuckerberg Media is kind of a holding company, if you will. So we have Zuckerberg Institute, and then we have our children's initiatives also. Okay. I created a children's book called Dot about a very tech-savvy little girl. Thank you. Dot has now become a television show and has a lot of offshoots around the world. So we have that one. And then Sue's Tech Kitchen.
Okay. I did the research on this, and because my younger daughter loves like cooking and is like a sugar addict. And I was like, oh my God, it's the only thing that works for me with her is bribing her with like candy and sugar. And what I saw, I'm going to let you talk about it, but what I saw what you were doing with this, I was like, this is how I'm going to get her to learn about technology.
Yes. You know what? That's exactly the thinking I had, because I started thinking, okay, we have this challenge where we're losing girls at 8 years old in tech. So maybe instead of like beating it down their throats in school of like, you have to code, and they're not interested. I was like, well, what are kids that age interested in? Like, they're interested in dessert. Universally, all kids are interested in dessert. So we launched this concept sweet shop where everything uses technology, science, coding. So we have 3D printed chocolate that we make. We have this station where you learn to code a little robot by actually placing candy on the board in different ways. And every single child learned how to code that robot.
It's genius.
Because
it's
they got to eat the candy. So, I mean, we teach about liquid nitrogen through cereal, different things. And you start to see that aha moment happen for children and families, that they come in and they start to see like, wait a minute, this is exciting. I'm having this like magical experience with a 3D printer, and suddenly it doesn't feel as scary or accessible or something that's only for boys.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I also think it fits exactly with today's experiential economy, and people are craving experiences to get closer to brands to learn. Yeah. And this is, if I'm not mistaken, a pop-up or a tour that you do.
Yes, so we just completed a 10-city tour around the U.S. And we really made it a priority to go to cities where there's less access to STEM education. So instead of like L.A., Manhattan, Chicago, we went to Jackson, Mississippi, Chattanooga, Tennessee, Tacoma, Washington. You know, we went to places where I felt there was a real need to introduce people on the other side of the digital divide. But we're actively looking for a lot of partnerships now. We have pop-ups inside children's museums now.
I love that idea.
So even just a few blocks from where we're recording, we do
the Children's Museum
of Manhattan.
3rd.
That's right. Most, I think once a month at least, we do a pop-up, a 3D cookie cafe.
Oh, God.
So where you can come in and make your own 3D printed robot cookie or spaceship or something. And we have several partnerships like that. And we're just actively thinking about next steps for Sue's Tech Kitchen.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors. How success happens. It's the name of this podcast, but it also describes the process of starting a business with the goal of helping people live happier, healthier lives. I'm talking about MindBody. For almost 20 years, they've been linking hundreds of thousands of passionate health, wellness, and beauty professionals to the millions of clients they serve. MindBody understands that taking care of yourself means something different for everyone, and that's why they're committed to connecting millions of customers to a huge selection of local fitness classes, massage and acupuncture, salons and spas, and they find, book, and pay all in one app. You can partner with them by listing your business at mindbodyonline.com/success. MindBody, the solution to grow and manage every detail of your business and customer experience. mindbodyonline.com/success. And our next sponsor. I'm usually not open to trying new types of dress shirts, especially ones with many colors or a little different from my normal look. But my wife, she's the stylist in our family, and she ends up buying me new shirts. I usually hesitate, of course, to wear them, but then I wear them, I start getting compliments, and I want more. Well, the same thing happened when I tried on Paul Frederick shirts. They had interesting colors and really cool patterns that totally elevated my wardrobe. Paul Frederick has been making dress shirts for over 30 years, and those shirts are pretty darn good. The Paul Frederick shirts I have feel good, they're comfortable. I even tried a purple shirt on for the first time, and you know what? Adding some color to my look lifted my spirits, and people noticed. And of course, people noticed my shirt as I got compliments on it when I walked down the street. So of course, I went back to Paul Frederick and bought more shirts. And now you can get $50 off any shirt from Paul Frederick just by visiting paulfrederick.com/HSH. Again, that's paulfrederick.com/HSH.
And we're back. So talking about then Zuckerberg Media, another thing I noticed is when you do go on the website and look at the business overall, what I love was right there in the heading, which this spoke to me and to our audience as entrepreneurs, the way it was, you just had like two buttons, I think, young entrepreneurs and not like,
that's
what
right,
is
current and future.
Yes, current and future, which is, it just makes you feel, it's a great feeling to see that people don't get scared away. Like, what's this business? Like, what made you place everything in so big in those buttons up there about entrepreneurs?
Yeah, because I think we need to focus right now on making sure that everyone has the opportunity to be an entrepreneur right now. And so a lot of our focus with Zuckerberg Institute is on training people right now who need those skills. But I also want to make sure that we're not losing people who don't even know that they could grow up to be entrepreneurs.
Like you.
That's right. I mean, I think, you know, I accidentally found my way back into entrepreneurship through tech and Facebook and being in that climate, but I would have been lost to entrepreneurship, honestly, because no one ever sat me down and told me, Randy, you could create your own job or you could create your own company. And that's why I want to be focusing on both current and future entrepreneurs, because I don't want to lose millions and millions of girls who don't even know that they could grow up to run the next companies.
It really is true. And going back to talking about how growing up, going to school, college, that you don't really, let's say, learn exactly the life skills for what you're going to be doing in, let's say, the work world. And personally, myself, I went to school, I wanted to be a journalist and a broadcast journalist. And I just, I couldn't get a job anywhere coming out of school. I went to Boston University and I came back and I'm like, trying to get a job.
And now look at you here with your own show.
A podcast.
Yes. Now I hope you like contacted all those people who didn't hire you and you were like, look at me now.
I don't have that many subscribers yet, but once I do, I'm going to start sending that to them. But I will tell you what was very interesting was coming back, not getting a job in that field that I really wanted to be in and thinking, what am I going to do? And all of a sudden I fall into business and sports business. And then I'm like, let me go start this company. What do I have to lose? But I really didn't know. And I didn't know I was an entrepreneur. And I think a lot of people too, like they could be really good at certain things, but they just don't know that they're entrepreneurs.
I think every single one of us is an entrepreneur. Even if you're working inside a bigger company, you're probably inventing new ways to do your job or new processes, or the world around us is changing so quickly that if you're not thinking in an entrepreneurial way, you can't survive.
Yeah.
So there is an entrepreneur inside every single one of us. And that's really what we seek to nurture at Zuckerberg Media, no matter if you're 8 or 88.
I love that. You span the spectrum, right?
That's right.
And just thinking about that and focusing back on children, I'm really curious of your thoughts on technology and where it's going and how, because I know a lot of listeners have kids here. Yeah. And I think one of the biggest battles we all have is kids just, I can't get my kid off the phone. I can't get my, and I'm like, and today, my daughter, I was walking with her and she was like, you know, why do you keep saying, you know, in some ways like technology's bad? And she was like, technology's all not bad. And I was like, I agree. Technology, of course, is not. It could be great. I was specifically talking about like social media but like where being such an expert and seeing so much in this area, having children, how do you prepare them? What's your thoughts on that?
Totally. I think that's a great question. I'm really glad that your daughter said that, because I do think as adults, we did not grow up with this. And so our brains immediately go to a place of fear and worry when it comes to technology, because it's not native to us. Whereas I think actually most young people today, their brains gravitate towards the opportunity. Like when you see just the incredible storytelling that young people do today.
I love it.
The videos they're able to put out, the music. I mean, I think about, wow, if I had access to that when I was younger, making home videos, like that would have been amazing.
How great. You used to have to have like the camera and it barely worked.
It weighed more than I was. And it was like the tape lasted like 12 minutes or something. Right. And it was like expensive. And I think to do a special effect of words going across the screen, we had to unroll printer paper with the spools on the outside.
I'm a little older than you. We didn't even have that.
It was just crazy. So I think in that way, I think it's amazing
and the
access that children have. Of course, there's downsides whenever you give everyone a voice, as we've seen in the real world. Yeah. Some people use it for incredible storytelling. Some use it for bullying.
Which is awful.
So that's always kind of the terrible downside to giving more young people a voice.
Yeah, no, it's really true. There's so many positives. And my daughter saying that this morning and saying to myself, you know, it's really funny because I love the fact she uses an app to create like music videos. And I'm like, wow, she's actually taking the time. She's being creative. She's coming up with these storytelling ideas. And I'm like, that will help you like later in life, or that's something you're building, you're creating. So I can't tell her, don't be on that. It's when she's then scrolling through and watching other
especially a daughter, you don't want to tell her don't be on it because you know all the boys are on it for hours and hours.
Right.
And like we already know from this podcast that girls are handy. They have a step behind.
Yeah.
And so I think especially if you have a daughter who's interested in things like Minecraft or building or creating, like you should nurture that and encourage that. It's funny. I just saw my two sons the other day. They were playing this dance game on the Nintendo Switch. It's
where you
wear a bracelet and then you just like start dancing and they score you. I guess it uses like the haptic motion. But it was like they were getting a workout in our living room for an hour, just dancing and laughing. And I was like, you know, that's a great example of a game and technology bringing people together. It's not all isolating and all bad.
There are huge positives.
Yes.
There are huge positives. And I think that's something like you hit on right there, that fear, because you didn't grow up where we didn't grow up with it. So, but at the end of the day, for them, it's what's become kind of normal and it's how they're going to learn and how they're going to grow. And I think that's just so important, you know, especially as technology. I mean, it changes so fast, right?
That's right. And I mean, to be totally honest, the workplaces of the future are going to happen through screens. They're going to happen through video conferencing. They're going to be distributed where more people are working from homes or co-working spaces by themselves and dialing in to meetings. And so I think in some ways it's good that we're preparing young people where they're spending a lot of time having relationships through screens and understanding how that works, because that's how future workplaces are going to be. And you're going to have to learn how to have difficult conversations without sitting in a room with someone face to face. And you're gonna have to learn how to hire and fire people over video chat or text message. I mean, it seems ridiculous, but these are not things that our generation knows how to do.
No. And I think it's, you know, it's funny, we learn along the way, but you can't stop the next generation. They're the ones who are gonna be working soon and in jobs and they're going to be running businesses, and that's what they're used to and that's what they're accustomed to. And it's going to change. You can't stop it.
That's right. The train has left the station.
Right?
So we could either be, you know, the curmudgeon standing on the platform being like in the good old days, or like we can hop on board and adjust our own jobs and our own careers. But I do think there, you know, the wonderful upside is that there's so much opportunity to get in on the ground floor of things, the opportunity for anyone to start their own podcast, all of these emerging fields and things like blockchain, CBD, AI, where we don't have decades of like only men and women are fighting.
Yeah.
Everyone can get
it's
in on
totally
the ground
open.
Floor of all of these things. And so I think, you know, if in this age of tech innovation, if you have your eyes open, there's just incredible opportunity out there.
Yeah, I really believe too, we're at the very beginning of, look, how long has the internet even been around? It reminds me, it's really funny.
Yeah, just like a few decades, really.
Yeah. I saw something, WABC Channel 7 here in New York, they have an Instagram account and they'll run old shows and clips. And there was this one where it was the first time, it must have been like late 80s or something.
Yeah.
They were talking about the internet. And between them, they were like, is this thing going to last? Or is it? But just what I'm saying is that it was kind of funny, but I'm also thinking that was only 30 years ago. Like, we're still so at the beginning. There's so much opportunity for entrepreneurs to go build businesses in these spaces.
Totally. I mean, when you think about what movies will look like 30 years from now, unreal. It'll probably be like the characters will be coming off the screen. It'll be whatever, you know, like the 5G is going to unlock so much opportunity, and that I don't even think our brains can fathom what movies will be like 30 years from now.
What about for kids and toys, and what do you foresee? Like, what, how do, like, are they going to be still playing with Legos, or is it now like they can?
Yeah, you know, I sure hope so. I do, because I think that for some ways, the more that the world changes and becomes tech savvy, the more nostalgic and retro that we get about wanting children to figure out things for themselves. So one of the big things I've seen is that some of the most tech savvy leaders in Silicon Valley are also the ones who give the least technology to their own children.
I wanted to ask you about that because I've always read about that.
Yes.
And
it's very, I mean, it's very common.
It is.
They all want to go to these like Montessori schools where it's just outdoor play, no mention of tech.
That's why I love summer camp. My kids go to summer camp and it's like they don't have technology for like 7 or 8 weeks.
Right.
It's a sleepaway camp. And you find that. But I think there is going to be a need, you know, in terms of the retreats from technology. I think that's super important. And we don't have too much time, but I want to just ask you, for you, in terms of the future, you have a lot of things that you are. You're a real entrepreneur because you're, you know, from investor to author to, you know, business owner, running. Where for you, and most importantly, advocate for especially women in technology, for you, where do you see yourself in future in the next few years? Where do you really want to make your mark?
Thank you. That's such a great question. And it keeps changing. I think all of our personal brands, that's something you have to keep revisiting. I like to call myself these days a professional mom, and that doesn't mean stay at home mom. Because when I think of the things that I do, I give money to entrepreneurs. I give tough love. I give mentorship, like all the things that a mom does.
You've been trained.
Like, that's what I do. So I'm like a professional mom to entrepreneurs around the world, really. And I love that job. I've been doing a lot of angel investing in startups. I do a lot of coach one-on-one or group coaching and mentorship. I think last year I did almost 50 speaking engagements around the
world.
And
I will tell you, because in my last business that I owned, we had booked you a couple of times. Yeah. You've did a few engagements with other speakers, and we got incredible. We're coming from a little bit of a construction
zone. That's right. We're in a construction zone, startup zone.
It's New York City. But I heard incredible things about the authenticity and the talks you gave. And we got incredible feedback. So I hope you keep doing those. I know it's hard with everything you're doing.
It's hard with everything and with three children, but I do try to make it a priority because I think, thank you for your commitment to putting female leaders on stage. I think that's, you know, I really appreciate that. But I think, you know, a lot of people go to those conferences because they're in a place where they need that motivation. Maybe they feel lost or they feel like they're on the verge of a professional change and they need to be inspired. And, you know, I think my story has been one of an unlikely road to entrepreneurship. And I think if I could do it, starting off my career wanting to be an actress and find my way into this, and actually now I found my way back to Broadway, which is really fun. But if I could do that, anyone could do that. And so I get a lot of satisfaction and joy out of being a professional mom to entrepreneurs around the world. And that's something that's really filling my soul right now.
Which it all makes sense where you are now. Not saying going from wanting to be an actress into being in tech and then an entrepreneur, but the fact that you have that creative side, you have this business side, what you're doing now and really mentoring and investing, that really plays into, you need all of that. You need to communicate with people.
That's
you
right.
need to understand technology. You need to understand business. So where you are right now, it makes perfect sense. And I know we don't have too much time, but just tell me about the whole Broadway thing, because that is your passion. That's your real
life passion.
It is
my real passion. So actually the reason that I left Silicon Valley was because I actually got the opportunity to come back to New York and star in a Broadway show, which I know is great. That's a crazy thing to say, but it was Rock of Ages, an 80s
great
rock
show.
Musical. So
I
fun.
Love the music. I love the show.
I guess one of the producers had this crazy idea that they should get a tech personality to come star in the musical, and that would bring in kind of a new group of ticket buyers in New York from company like Google and,
right,
and Facebook
sure.
and all these places. And they said that the first 8 people they talked to all said my name.
That's
they were
amazing.
Like, they were like, there's only one woman at the intersection of Broadway
well, you have
and
the
Silicon
resume.
Valley. That's right. They're like, and so that's who you have to go to. So they called me and offered me the part on the phone. No audition, nothing. They were like, all 8 people we spoke to said you.
Now how, like, listen, I mean, it's one thing if you're in like, and it's not even, it's hard to like get up in like, you know, an off Broadway stage. That's got to be, was that one of the biggest challenges
it was,
of like
it was huge.
Of your
it
life?
It was the scariest thing I'd ever done in my entire life. I only had 7 rehearsals. And I had to open on Broadway being, I think, like the second leading female role in the show. So like multiple solos and dancing and things. Also, I was about 6 weeks pregnant and hadn't
told
anyone yet.
Oh my God, you didn't tell them, did you?
I hadn't because I was like, I don't want them to take this away from
exactly.
me. And so that was definitely the scariest and most challenging thing I'd ever done. But what I realized, I was like, you know what? If I can, in 7 rehearsals, having not acted or sung for decades, like if I could get out there and do this, I think I could do anything.
Hell yeah. Like that's like the test. Cause that has to be for me and thinking about it, I'm sure so many people like to be on stage and to act and to be on Broadway.
Yes.
Like that's it pretty freaky.
I
mean, that's just you and people are going to critique you and your performance. And
totally.
Like, that's a scary thing.
You know
what?
There's times in life that you are given an opportunity and you either rise to the challenge or you don't. And you're not handed very many of those
totally.
In life. So that's the time to kind of deep down and find that grit. I actually realized from that experience that I did not want to be a professional actress. Doing 8 shows a week of the same show over and over is just not that exciting after you've had the opportunity of running your own business.
And it's so taxing.
It is taxing.
I always respect those Broadway
So I
like
converted
actors.
My efforts into producing.
Okay.
Because I thought, okay, that's really where I can combine my love of theater and my experience running companies and helping
it's
entrepreneurs.
Like you're, it's
that's
your own
right.
business.
So now I have 5 shows currently running on Broadway that I'm
nothing like going in small.
Invested or producing. And so it's been a great journey. But yeah, that's why I say personal brands are always changing and flowing. And
And did you win a Tony Award?
I did.
Or
won,
it's not
yeah,
like
thank
it's
you.
A,
no, thank
I
you for bringing
to come
it up. Because
see it like in the
I know.
Alley, you
know I know. Well, as you see, as you mentioned, we're kind of in a construction zone right now. But I won 2 Tony Awards this past summer.
That's pretty cool.
I was about 8.5 months pregnant and 2 shows that I was producing won Tony Awards.
Did you go to the awards?
I did go to the awards. I wore sneakers under my gown
because
I was so pregnant. I went up on stage and it was, and now the Tonys are very proudly displayed in my office.
I bet, especially for someone who comes from like that background of always loving Broadway. And
so you never know. Sometimes your dreams come back and find you in interesting ways. And there's 50 paths to get to one end dream.
I love it. I love it how you've done it. And I love what you're doing, especially on the front of helping entrepreneurs, female entrepreneurs, and especially what you've done with kids. And again, I think like Sue's Tech Kitchen is genius. Like I'm getting my kids there. And I just think if you keep doing what you're doing, I mean, I'm sure I can come back here in a few years and talk about another 10 different things that you've done and have been successful at.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I had a great time chatting with you today.
Thanks. Thanks, Randy.
Thank you.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuckman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.